You're listening to the Chapman Cast, a podcast about religion and life.
Welcome to the Chapman Cast. My name is Pierce, and today I'm joined by Dr. Dan Sinisvet, Associate Professor at Bernathen College of the New Church. Dan, you teach philosophy, and we're having a month of doubt, talking about doubt. So I thought it'd be useful to have a new church philosopher online with us. But before we get started on that, Dan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Pierce. I had a very enjoyable Easter. And how are you today?
I'm doing wonderfully. The weather is absolutely gorgeous, and so that really helps my mood. I tend to doubt things most when it's rainy, cold, and 3 o'clock in the morning. But you had some things that you wanted to bring up. What's the first point about doubt that you think our listeners should know?
Well, I think the first point about doubt is to try to become conscious of the kind of doubt that you're dealing with. There are local doubts. So, for example, you could have a doubt that you know the best route to your local convenience store. Or you might have a global or universal doubt. For example, if you doubt that human beings really have free will, that they are either determined by either God or by some combination of nature and nurture, and if you also believe that human beings exist throughout the universe, then you have a universal doubt. You could also have a doubt from an objective standpoint. So you could have a belief about a cause for some illness that you have. You might read a variety of medical papers, and some of these papers and scientists say that your disease is caused by one thing, but other papers and other scientists say that it's caused by something else. Science seems to be one of the best objective methods that we have for arriving at justified true beliefs. You know, it is a disease that you have, so it's personal in that sense, but you're trying to look at it from an objective standpoint, but there's doubt about the belief that you have concerning the cause of your disease.
I want to get back to local versus global doubt in a second, but first, when you talk about subjective versus objective doubt, I can see the idea that if I have a sickness, I'm going to not be objective about the scientific information I take in. I'm going to try all sorts of kinds of cures. But I'm suspicious that we can have objective doubt, truly objective doubt. Can you give an example or talk a little bit about whether or not those two things are really discrete?
I would say it's more of a continuum. An example of a really objective doubt comes from the history of skepticism. So you have famous skeptics in the history of Western philosophy. Descartes, for example. He gives interesting reasons as to why you might doubt virtually everything, that there is an external world, or that you can be sure that you have a body, or that other minds exist. And that's a very sharp distinction from the kind of doubt you would experience if your best friend started to behave in a manner that suggested he wasn't loyal. So you're not doubting the entire human race. You don't doubt that there is another mind. You have a very specific personal doubt about your best friend. So one of the closest relationships that you have. Or maybe you have a doubt about yourself. And it's not based on any profound belief about the nature of humanity.
So it sounds like local doubt, these smaller doubts that are about more specific things, can be more subjective. But I'm wondering if that's what you meant. Can these universal global doubts about humanity also be subjective?
I would say they can be both. Let's use the example of God. So I might have, in a sense, these sort of objective, universal kinds of doubts about whether God exists or not. I might read arguments in books, let's say written by naturalistic philosophers or scientists, and they say that there's no good scientific evidence to show that there is a God. So I doubt God's existence because of that. On the other hand, I might come to doubt God's existence because I have not felt God, or I have not had a message or a communication from God. I might actually be convinced by arguments that I've read in philosophy books that such a being exists, infinite, uncreated, omniscient, omnipotent, etc. But because I haven't had any contact or interaction with such a being, I myself doubt that there is such a being.
It seems to me that in a belief in God, it would have to be both universal and incredibly subjective. And I'm always suspicious or skeptical of people who claim they have a very objective opinion about God based off of all these universal things they've seen. And I guess for me, the only proof in God is going to be subjective, because that's the most important thing from my experience. But we can talk about that a little bit later. So let's talk about these four things. There's local doubt and global doubt. And then the other dichotomy is subjective versus objective. How can these four things, these two axes, if you will, help us when dealing with doubt?
So if you know the kind of doubt that you're dealing with, then you might also know the kind of remedy. If you want to overcome that doubt, if it's the kind of doubt that is harmful and debilitating rather than the kind of doubt that can spur you to further research, in a sense, you compete with the doubt to try to see if you can overcome it. If you know what kind of doubt it is, then you also have at least a direction to see how you can solve that problem. So, for example, if you have a local doubt and it's very subjective, so, for example, I have doubts that my best friend is continuing to be loyal to me. So it's local, it's my best friend, and it's subjective. There's just, you know, some behavior, some things he said or done. Then I also have some idea about how I could overcome that doubt. I could check and see if it's merely my interpretation of his behavior. If I need to, I could go to another mutual friend. If it's very subjective, maybe what I need is a bit more objectivity to find out if the doubt is well-founded.
I like the idea that if I have a local subjective doubt that's causing me distress, I can look to things that are more objective. I'm wondering if I can even look to things that are more global. I can think about, well, wait a minute, how do friendships work? And that can give me some kind of objectivity. And going back to the example of a belief in God, I wonder if the opposite can happen, where I have this global sort of objective doubt in God. I'm intellectually curious. I might be a student in school. I'm thinking, well, God doesn't make sense. Well, that's because I may be objectifying it and universalizing it too much. Maybe I can say, well, wait a minute. What about me personally? Am I having these intellectual doubts about God because something has bothered me? I feel hurt or rejected or abandoned by God or by a parent or some other relationship? And remembering that just because I think I'm having a global objective experience, could be having a very personal subjective experience.
You could have a doubt that is primarily one of the understanding, I would also say, or primarily of the will. A doubt of the understanding, as you said, these sort of intellectual doubt. You might come into college, or you might have a chat with a naturalist or an atheist, and you might encounter some very persuasive, at least initially persuasive, arguments that questions the existence of God. These are intellectual doubts, and you don't know how to respond to these arguments or these criticisms. I would say one of the things to remember in that case is that even though while it's good to be able to support or defend your beliefs in the face of that kind of criticism, it's not up to you alone to support or defend beliefs like that. So just because you aren't able in the moment to answer a criticism, let's say to a belief in God, it doesn't mean that God doesn't exist. It just means that at that moment you weren't up to replying to the objection.
I really like that. And I can see how that could work in a very personal or localized setting too. If I imagine that I'm going to be running a marathon, 3 days beforehand, I panic and I think, I can't do it. That's why I have a coach. They may be able to look at me more objectively and say, hey, you've been training, we followed a program. I don't have to answer that doubt or that fear by myself. I think that's where often evil spirits or hell really likes to get us. They like to say, here's something that might be worrisome, and you're going to have to handle it all by yourself, which is sort of a terrifying experience.
Yes, it is a terrifying experience. This is why the existentialists speak of angst or angst. On the other hand, I do think there are some doubts that only you alone can handle. It's a good thing for you to struggle individually, personally, with some things, because otherwise you really won't make your faith your own. You really won't solidify a kind of as of self or that individual identity. What's interesting is when it comes to doubts about God, is I find these sort of intellectual or doubts from the understanding about the existence of God are different from doubts that I would say are generated from the will and are more subjective. I find those doubts are usually about the goodness or the wisdom of God. So somebody initially believes in God, but then terrible things happen, and we start to be angry or bitter or resentful. It's not so much that we have doubts of an intellectual nature, but we almost come into a state in which we feel that it would be bad if there continued to be such a being that was supposedly all good, all wise, all loving, and yet allowed terrible things to happen to us. And that's a very subjective, relationship-based, and I would say affective kind of doubt.
And it seems to me, even in those circumstances where it's powerful and personal, and we do need to handle it ourselves, that doesn't mean that we have to be alone in doing it. Reach out to God, even if you don't believe. That's very much the specific kind of prayer the Lord welcomes. If you have a question about whether or not God exists, ask him. Maybe you won't get the answer you want, but it's worth trying to ask.
Now, from a strictly philosophical standpoint, a philosopher has to object by saying, well, you can't ask the being whose existence you're doubting for help, because that begs the question, or it's a kind of vicious circle. However, on the other hand, I know exactly what you're saying from personal experience, because when I was trying to decide whether there is a God or not, one of the things I turned to was the Word. In Mark chapter 9, there's a story about a man who wants his child to be healed. Jesus says, I can heal your child if you believe. And the man replies to him, Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief. I remember reading that and thinking, wow, this is God incarnate. And he knows, of course, that this man believes, and yet there's still some unbelief. So it's not 100% belief. But this was acceptable to him because his child was healed. Doubt isn't necessarily 100% either. Even personal, local, very subjective, strong emotive or affective doubt isn't necessarily 100%. It's strong, but it doesn't mean that there's nothing there for the Lord to work with.
Yeah, it's a very powerful thought to think that doubt isn't all or nothing. Although in those moments of greatest despair, we tend to think it is. Before we started talking and recording, I had asked you about what different elements of doubt you thought were particularly important, and you brought up the issue of fear. And in our conversation now, you've mentioned fear a number of times. How does fear relate to doubt?
One of the books I read when I was in graduate school in philosophy is entitled Alvin Steadfast on Vernacular Island, and it's by Frank Jacobs with illustrations by Edward Gorey.
And we'll link to that book in the show notes.
It's a very entertaining as well as informative story. It contains a number of plays on words. But the main theme of the story is an old professor who seeks to find the doubt, who's this terrible, evil beast. As they explore the island, the doubt finds Dr. Crenshaw. The shadow of the doubt has overtaken him, because the doubt is this lizard-like creature with a 20-foot wingspan like a bat. Dr. Crenshaw is paralyzed by the shadow of a doubt, and it's because of his fears that's what paralyzes him. Meanwhile, Alvin, his young sidekick, finds a way to defeat the doubt, because even though the doubt casts a shadow over him, he is unafraid. The doubt lunges after him, he steps aside, and the doubt hits a rock, and this is on top of a mountain. You could read this in a correspondential manner. The doubt is phased. He's knocked silly. And Alvin begins to take apart the doubt. The doubt has the appearance of a really nasty-looking creature with claws and fangs. But as he takes apart the doubt, what's left underneath is just this frail-looking little furry creature that is ashamed and it's been humiliated because it's been outsmarted. Oftentimes, if you can get to the bottom of your doubt and if you can realize what is it that you're afraid of? Is it you're afraid that you'll end up believing something false? That was one of Descartes' main fears. Descartes was afraid that by not following a very strict method and by not doubting things in a global sense, he would believe things falsely. He would have cognitive errors. On the other hand, sometimes we have doubts that are, I would say, are more affective and based on relationships. So, for example, I have a doubt about my friend. Why? Because I've been hurt in the past and I've been taken advantage of. I don't want to feel those feelings again. And so if you know that this doubt is based on a fear of vulnerability, then again, it helps you realize what sort of steps you can take to overcome the doubt.
I like the idea of examining my will and seeing that I have some stimulus coming at me. I have an affection for something. And it's being threatened, and so I respond with fear. And that fear is experienced as doubt. I think it's fascinating to think about how affections through emotions create thoughts and form those thoughts and change our perception of reality. I hope people are willing to try looking at themselves that way. Theoretically objective global doubt, or even just objective local doubt. One of my favorite books on investing is called The Only Three Questions That Count. And the third question, and the most important one, is after you've figured out your investment strategy, you ask yourself, what is my brain doing to me right now to trick me? Because it's so easy for us to lose sight of our subjective opinions. And at the same time, those subjective opinions are what matters most, and they can change. And that's, again, where I think prayer comes in. So when we're faced with doubt, what are some practical tips you can give us for overcoming doubt?
One tip, as I said, is to identify the kind of doubt and then see if you can find a corresponding remedy. When I was studying the New Testament, I was surprised to find one story in Luke in which the apostles came to the Lord and they asked him to increase their faith. He basically tells them, do what is your duty to do and don't take any credit for it. That's it. That's the end of the story. And so one way of addressing your doubts actually is to do what you know you ought to be doing, that at least you have a clear sight of, and remember to give the merit to the Lord for the good that comes out of that.
I think that first part is very easy to understand and appreciate. Going back to our example of a runner looking to run a marathon, focus back on your training. Soldiers are told this all the time when they go into war. Remember your training, because that's what's going to help you. In a lot of ways, that's what's going to help you overcome fear, because it gives you something to do. But what does it mean to let go of credit?
I think it means to not say that the good that we do comes entirely from ourselves. If you can think of yourself as a manifestation or a channel of good that comes from another origin, but that is expressed through you, that's a way to not take credit for the good.
And how does that help us fight doubt?
I think it helps us fight doubt because we remind ourselves that we're finite. In our finitude, we realize two things. One is that anything that's perfect and that's genuinely true and good and wise is from a supernatural origin. It's from the infinite. If there's one being that has no doubt, it's God, and we're not God, so it's good to remember that. But the other side of that is to just accept our finitude and to remember that in a world limited by space and time and our own cognitive faculties, our own genetics and how we were raised, we will do as best as we can. Some doubts we will always have. We will probably always have through our entire lives. That's acceptable to the Lord, as long as you're, again, doing what you know you ought to do and not taking credit for it. Other doubts, I will make progress on them. We will overcome them.
I like the idea of being able to overcome some doubts, but recognizing that I'm imperfect, that finite reality. So when I think about whether or not I'm going to be able to finish a paper or an essay or a particular job, or whether or not I'm going to be able to have a good relationship to my wife, and I have doubts, if I can remember that I'm not perfect and never will be, then I don't have to worry as much about the result. I can let go of it ever being perfect, which makes it so much easier to do my duty.
So another practical step you can take is to ask yourself, what are your options? So let's say you doubt that there is a God. What are my options? If I don't believe in God, then what will I believe in? Your options are nature or yourself. Look at the pros and cons of believing in all three, or in none of them, or in some combination of them. One of the passages from the New Testament that speaks volumes to me is when some of the disciples stopped following the Lord turned to the remaining disciples and said, are you going to leave me, or are you going to stop following me too? And Peter said to him, Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. So in other words, Peter realized, well, who else are we going to follow? That's a theme that also comes up in the Psalms. Well, if you don't believe in God, what are you going to believe in? Where do you think good is going to come from? Where do you think what is true is going to come from? Where is wisdom going to come from? It's not exactly a strong affirmation, but one of the ways of coming to believe something is by eliminating the other options, the other possibilities, and going with the one that you think is the best.
In other words, if I don't think that God is the source of what is good and true, then really all I have left is myself or the universe. I look at the universe and I know that it's pretty impersonal, so I have a hard time believing that. When I look at myself, I'm pretty flawed. I can't be the source of good and truth. And with that very sobering thought, do we have any closing thoughts?
In closing, just as there are developmental phases for a lot of things, I think there is also developmental phases for faith and doubt. So the first time you experience certain kinds of doubt, it might rock your world. But after a while, some of the doubts almost appear like old friends, and you can actually get comfortable with them and realize that your life will continue and things will actually improve, and some of those doubts will never go away. But it won't cripple you. And instead, you can use some of the doubts to actually grow through a particular stage and on to the next stage. That's when you find that dealing with doubt actually can lead to hope.
Well, thank you, Dan, for joining us and giving us some real tools to work with doubt. And thank you, listeners, for joining us on another episode of the Chapman Cast.
Content on the Chapman Cast is owned by its hosts and interview guests. Find us online at newchurchperspective.com/chapmancast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a positive review on iTunes and tell your friends. We welcome your feedback in the comments section of the website. Thank you for listening.